I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Lyndon McIntyre joins me again. The novelist and journalist has just published his latest novel, Punishment. It's described as a powerful book that looks at justice and vengeance in a small town. Tony has just retired to his childhood hometown in Nova Scotia. The former corrections officer has a connection to Dwayne, a convict he knew back in prison. There's a murder in town, the granddaughter of Catty Stewart, Tony's first love. Implicated in that is Tony. I'll get Mr. McIntyre to tell us about his book, Punishment, especially the themes he explores. Lyndon McIntyre was co-host of The Fifth Estate for 24 years. He's won countless awards for his work in journalism, and has been critically acclaimed for his novels The Long Stretch, The Bishop's Man, for which he received the Giller Prize, and Why Men Lie, which he was last on with in 2012. That book was a number one bestseller. Punishment is published by Random House. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program in Toronto today, Lyndon McIntyre. Mr. McIntyre, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So you left the CBC in the spring, is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so did you miss it at all?
Yes. I could go on and on, but I mean, it's a huge adjustment. You work in a particular profession for 50 years. You work in a particular organization for 38 of those years. It's a bit of a shock to find yourself on the outside of it. I worked on the Fifth Estate for 24 years. You step out. I mean, it's the nature of our business that we are very involved in our work. We are very involved with the people we work with. And in my case, I was certainly unprepared for the fact that once I stepped outside, I would realize that almost everybody that I knew in any way intimately or well was still on the inside, and I was no longer allowed to go there. so it brings about a period of intense adjustment, and plus you take for granted when you work for a place like that for that long that there's a certain structure to your life that you just move within that structure and you work according to the imperatives of the structure, and you step outside of it and you suddenly realize, wow, there's no structure, which for some people might be a great thing, but then for some of us it takes a while to make an adjustment.
Are you writing more as a result?
Not much more. It's early days. I am writing. I try to get up very early in the day, and I try to write something every day or to rewrite something every day. And I have a project. I have an idea. Right now it has a beginning and a middle and an end. The execution, of course, will take time because that's the way these projects work. Some days you know basically what you're going to write, and other days it sort of hits you like a lightning bolt as you struggle. So it's awfully difficult to say how much I'm going to write, when it's going to be done, but it's progressing, yeah. And I hope I can keep on doing it. I often compare myself to the Shahrazad in the 1001 Arabian Nights stories, where if she had quit telling a story, they were going to kill her. And I had it in the back of my mind, if I quit telling stories, somebody's going to cut my head off, and that'll be the end of me.
Yeah. So let's talk about Punishment, your latest novel. I want to avoid really explaining it, and I'll get you to do it, because then I'm liable to give stuff away that I'm not supposed to. The small town in which it takes place, it's called St. Ninian, is that right?
Correct.
Where is that?
St. Ninian, you know, I guess people would deduce it's an East Coast kind of composite. Mm-hmm. Of communities. I wanted a community that had a municipal head office, courthouse. I wanted a community that had a Hells Angels motorcycle club. I wanted to have a community with police, and but not a town. It had to be kind of a village. I wanted to be vague in the exact location because I wanted it to be, and I think it is, a community that people in many, many parts of Canada can identify with, just in terms of the culture and the values of the place and the close-knittedness of the place, the roots, and the tendency to cling to and celebrate a mythology, I believe, that these places are, you know, the God's country. They are places people live because of safety and the security of bringing up children in a secure place. I think what the story reflects is a reality that bad things happen in these kinds of places too, mm-hmm. and that there's a fragility in these places that you cannot underestimate, and the you know the mythology that they're gorgeous, safe, and places with strong moral underpinnings can become dangerous when it overlooks the possibility that ordinary people in ordinary places are capable of doing terrible things, the same as they are in big, complex, wicked cities.
And so that's the city that Tony grew up in, and that's the city that he's retiring to after this career in corrections. Is that right?
Yes. Both he and his boyhood acquaintance, Neil, grew up in this place. They both left the place and went off to follow careers in larger places. Neil went to the United States. He enlisted in the American forces, fought in the Vietnam War, came back, became an American, and became a police officer in Boston. Tony left the place. He went away, became intrigued with the corrections system, joined it as a guard first and a parole officer, with the notion that prisons are supposed to be about rehabilitation and about sending people back into the community somewhat improved from when they were taken in for, for punishment and supposed to be rehabilitation. He's become jaded over the years. There's events happen in the prison system. He has to retire around the same time that his old acquaintance Neil has to retire from the Boston Police Force. They both end up back in this little community. And coincidentally, around the same time, another person from that community who has gone away to pursue a life of crime, he lands back in the community because he's just been released from prison. And he lives alone in a house that becomes a hangout for bored young people who don't really have much else to do or many other places to go. They hang out at Strickland's house where they can smoke up and drink and watch videos and listen to fascinating stories about crime and prison. A bad thing happens there, mm-hmm. and the community needs explanation. The community needs reassurance that the bad thing that happened is not symptomatic of community breakdown and decay. That it's not caused by a dysfunctional family. And, of course, the perfect explanation is that there was a bad kid living in this community. He was making bad things happen, and he is 100% responsible for what they consider to have been a crime. And the community demands punishment. Unfortunately for the community, the justice system has to take account of things like evidence mm-hmm. and proof. In fact, so you get a split between the emotionally driven perceptions of the court of public opinion and the fact-driven, evidence-driven culture of the justice system. And what happens unfolds from that conflict.
You dedicate the book to Ty Conn.
I do.
Yeah. Is there any... his story... your experiences with him, did that inspire you to think about some of the themes that you write about in this book?
I dedicated it to the memory of Ty Conn, mostly to acknowledge the fact that it was through my friendship with him and through the time I spent getting to know him that I developed an awful lot of understanding about how the correction system works, about the character of prison inmates, the enormous diversity of character in these institutions, a lot about the nature of work as a corrections officer or a parole officer, an awful lot about the relationship between cops and crooks and lawyers and judges, and how sometimes the correction system can, and more often than not, just give up on this whole notion that's of rehabilitation, which is supposed to be half of its justification. I mean, incarceration and punishment are part of the equation, but rehabilitation, sending people back to the community as functioning, contributing members of the community is probably the most important aspect of what the system is for, and it is the one that is most frequently ignored, neglected, and in the present political situation for which there's very little sympathy anymore. We're in an era now where the mantra is about law and order and punishment, and to the exclusion of correction, to the exclusion of rehabilitation, and quite frequently to the exclusion of justice. And this is a political mantra that's driven by ideology. It's also driven by emotional considerations that don't take account of hard objective facts. And it's going to be particularly acute in the next year or so as we move into a federal election in which community safety, law and order, all these things are going to become major themes, as I predicted.
Yeah. Now, for people that don't know about Tycon, they can you co-wrote a book about 10 years ago on him and your relationship with him. Is that right?
Yes.
Who killed Tycon?
Who killed Tycon? Tycon was a young guy. He's a product of a 16-year-old mom, bad adoption, abusive childhood, sort of desperate and stupid in many ways, responses to all the negative influences on his life. He becomes incarcerated at the age of about 12 or 13 in group homes and then in youth detention. And by the time he died at the age of 32, I think he had spent some total of like 69 days or something of that nature as a sort of a free person in society. The rest of the time was spent in penitentiaries for armed robbery and for escaping from penitentiaries. Mm-hmm. So he was not, except for the fact, you know, there is inherent violence in an armed robbery, but apart from that, the guy was very peaceable. He was intelligent, articulate, who wanted nothing more than the opportunity to become a citizen, and had never really had a whole lot of encouragement. I gave him a lot of encouragement, and he was making some progress, and then a bunch of things happened in the system, and he gave up, and he escaped one last time and managed to get himself killed before he could be taken back. It was a tragic story that reflects badly on most of the institutions in our society for dealing with children, youth, troubled youth, and adult criminals. It's a bunch of systems that really failed him at every level of his life, and it was a short and tragic life.
So you mentioned earlier the political situation that we're in and the relationship of that, say, to some of the themes that are in this book. Do you obviously think about these things in your life as you write. Do you have conclusions and then you, say, write them in a book, or do you form conclusions after writing a book?
Well, I've been in journalism for a long, long time, and gradually over the course of the experience that you go through in journalism, in a sort of a very complex way, in a lot of places, a lot of circumstances, a lot of situations, a lot of reality, you don't necessarily form conclusions as much as you form impressions, you form insights. You get a lot of knowledge, and at a certain point you realize that the insights and the knowledge are not really being used to any effect, that in your newspaper or television or radio coverage you are skimming the top of a particular situation of the day, and you're delivering it in a fairly condensed form, with an awful lot of the substance and the underlying reality that is just left on the cutting room floor, as they say. So at a certain point, you know, I sort of had this critical mass of unused material stuck in my craw. Mm-hmm. And I started asking myself, what am I going to do with this? I think I've got a lot of ideas that I'm not going to necessarily call them conclusions. I'm not necessarily going to call them brilliant advances in human thinking. But they're interesting enough to form aspects of storytelling and in that format go to people for people to consider and accept or reject or build on. And that's essentially how I got into and why I got into fiction, was to take an awful lot of unused material from my memory, from my heart, and craft it into stories about people that I would have to make as real as I could, and situations that would have to be authentic and credible, and deliver it for the purpose of making people think about things. Things like violence, the consequences of violence, how violence migrates down through generations within a family or within a community. Also about the dichotomy that occurs sometimes between ideas of law and order up against ideas about justice, and how political people will exploit public fear, either whether it's for justification in invading another country, as happened in 2002-2003, or as justification for vigilante behavior, such as occurs in this book I've just written. So, experience for me has just sort of demanded that I process a lot more of it in some format than I was using on TV or even in the newspapers. And the format I decided on was fiction. I was lucky enough to actually make it happen in a few cases. Mm-hmm. So far, so good.
Yeah. And do you find that you have more, say, I don't know, questions, more questions that need to be answered with regards to these themes that you discuss in the book?
It's interesting that I have a couple of book ideas. One is now being developed into a story. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to do with secrets and coincidence, and how people with deep, dark secrets who come to think of them as being protected from any sort of exposure or accountability discovers that you really don't have much control over these factors, and that a series of unpredictable coincidences will tear the lid off these things, and retribution will come in awful forms because it's sort of been delayed. And that's the kind of story I'm exploring. You know, two people encounter each other as a matter of coincidence. They become aware of the fact that they were in the same place at the same time, and slowly it dawns on them that they may very well have been part of certain war crimes. And they decide not to really go into it, so they can either have a superficial kind of relationship. But then coincidental circumstances continue to unfold and threaten them with exposure. And how they react to the danger of exposure is what will make up the drama of the story. It's very early age stages now, and it's going to take me a while to pull it off.
So Punishment is a departure from this trilogy of novels that you wrote. Was it different, say, when you started writing this, because it was, say, not part of the previous three books, the novels, I should say?
It was more liberating, I guess, to move into different characters without any preconception about who they are or any restraint on where you take them. Having used the same cast of characters for three novels, I found that by the end of the third novel, I had to be very careful about the continuity or the consistency of who these people are, because they have become real. Mm-hmm. In this one, you know, starting from scratch with, I guess, four main principles. A woman, well, five main principles. There's two women, a young ex-convict and then two retired fellas from the system.
Mm-hmm.
Each one of them I was able to invest with qualities and character, and I, you know, that's ambiguous. There's one woman who is pretty consistently a good person. There's another woman who is a major character who turns out to be very complex. And young Strickland is pretty one-dimensionally a loser.
Mm-hmm.
And then the two main guys, the former police officer and the former corrections officer, are very complex characters. You know, one minute you can find yourself hating one of them, and the next minute you're laughing at some nutty observation he makes. You find yourself very warm to another, and he's really becoming your favorite person, and then he does something that some people have described as disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the nature of human, that's the nature of people. People are interesting because they're unpredictable, because human character is flawed. Human character is capable of really nice things, really good behavior, and it's also capable of awful things. And that the same tendencies and the same proclivities can occur within the same character. One person can one day do the most remarkably kind, generous thing, and shortly thereafter shock the hell out of you with just a callous nature of something that he's done. And that's my sense of humanity. Everybody is capable of anything.
Yeah.
And we hopefully spend our lives trying to do a bit more good or a bit less bad, and sort of come out on balance as being regarded as okay people. But I think it's always a mistake to categorically decide that someone is good or bad. I think people are just people.
Yeah.
And they do good things and they do bad things.
Yeah, we're more nuanced than we'd like to think we are.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And this is hard to convey in a book,
mm-hmm.
but it's the challenge that makes the process interesting.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to finish this book, Punishment, and it's been a pleasure talking to you again, and good luck with this book.
Okay, well, I'm not going to ask you where you are in the book, but I think I like the ending of the book personally, so you can let me know if you do too.
Absolutely, we'll do, yeah. The book is called Punishment. It's from Random House Canada's author, Lyndon McIntyre. Join me on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plunta.